How are you doing, man?
I'm good. One of those things where today was, President's Day, had the day off from school.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, lucky.
And was, mentally very productive, but, didn't really do much physically. It was a lot of grading, working on stuff for master's class and things like that, but on the upside, it was a day where I did all of that and was very productive while never getting out of my pajamas.
Those are good days.
It felt like a pretty incredible day, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, the simple pleasures. I find that I'm fighting more and more for the simple stuff I'm becoming a homebody almost, running around sounds less enjoyable than hanging out at home anymore.
Yeah, I've got to be careful not to get into that level because, my starting point for how much running around I do and how much time I spend, actively seeking things outside of my apartment to be doing, it's pretty small already. If I lean any harder into that, oof.
That's fair. See, I have a couple of kids. I don't get home time. I'm at jiu-jitsu right. 3 times a week and soccer 1 time a week. And then it's all over the place. So I'm just leave me alone. I just want to sit here and drink my coffee and watch Saturday cartoons. All right.
Are there still any good Saturday cartoons?
I don't know. Stream everything now.
Fair point. So that it's not really day dependent anymore.
Right. So we poisoned the mind of our daughters. We played the long game, man. We planted the seed so long ago, and they are finally watching Avatar: The Last Airbender. So we're me and Kristen high-fived the other day because they went outside and they actually played Avatar in their imagination game. And then Caleb's like, I want to watch more episodes. We were like, yes.
Good, because so do we.
Because the new show's coming out, and we wanted to rewatch season 1, and so we were like, oh, it just worked out. The timing was too perfect.
Love it when a plan comes together, man.
Yes. All right, let's hit an intro and jump into it. Welcome to the podcast, Blue Collar Scholars. Not long ago, a group of brilliant minds met together at a pub to discuss their unfinished works. They recognized the value of coming together around delicious beverages and having meaningful conversations. That group was known as the Inklings. The Inkledoo podcast here, we're working to be the second iteration of that group. So pour yourself a craft beverage, pull up a chair, and join the conversation. All right, man. You had anything good to drink?
Nothing too terribly exciting, really. I've been drinking some, it's called Bothan. It's like a Scotch whiskey from the lowlands, much sweeter, none of that it doesn't taste at all like you're inhaling a campfire the way people tend to think of scotches as being. And so that's kind of been this long weekend, especially when I was kind of sitting around putzing on things and just looking for a little sipper.
Yeah.
Pour a little bit of that into a glass and, it's good. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
It is a sweet, a lot of kind of vanilla to it. It's finished in an old, bourbon cask, and so it's got some of those notes to it and things. So yeah, it's good, nice. But it's not.
Yeah, no, I like those. I'm getting ready to start some pre-writing on my next story, and that's what I do because you don't have you don't want to drink something. You just want to sip on something. It's just just enough to keep your hand kind of busy and just kind of just enough to keep the creativity going. So yeah. I get that. I, on the other hand, have had something interesting.
Ooh.
I got to look at it was called Golden Drock. And it was one of the big bottles, right? And it had a cork and the little wire thing and everything on it. And so it was fun.
Yeah.
We grilled burgers and we were sitting outside having dinner outside. And I was like, hey, watch this. Boop. And shot it across the yard. And it was.
Champagne opened your beer.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And it is. It says it's a dark red triple ale.
Ooh, so one of the Belgian triples?
I'm going to assume so, with something with the name of Golden Drock.
Yeah, that okay. Yeah, that's true. That makes sense. Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah, like the.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, dude, it was so good. It was like Kristen tried it. She's like, "Oh, that's weird," and I was like, "What is weird about it?" And I tried it. And I was like,
"How very dare you?"
That is. I didn't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting because it's a, what is it, a triple, and it's like super malty, you know, it's got all the advertising on it. And it was, man, it was very malty and sweet and boozy because it's 10.5.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then it did have like the red characteristics where it was, like some toasty malts to it, but not anything really dark. It wasn't dark at all. Like it was super smooth, easy to drink. It was really good. And it's like one of the first beers I poured in a long time that actually had a head because it's double fermented, right? Yep. They ferment it and then they ferment it in the bottle. So like, I mean, I wasn't expecting that. And so I, like, I messed up my pour on the first one and I ended up with like 3 inches of, I was like, oh, man, I got to do that right next time. So I'll have to be more prepared. But man, it was super good. I don't know how much it cost. I got it as a gift, and I don't know if I would go back into that aisle for beer very often. But boy, it was very good.
Nah, man, those. I tell you what, for an occasion beer, I am almost inevitably going to be going for one of those Belgians, whether it's the double, the triple, or. I've only seen like one or two of them, but like they even have like a quad.
Really?
And it's like, yeah. The only time I've had a quad was probably, let's see, that would have been not quite 5 years ago, but like that general ballpark. So I don't remember it with any detail, but it was like in a brewery and they had a Belgian quad. And I was like, oh, well...
Gotta try that.
I've liked all of the other ones as the numbers go up, so let's see what happens. Yeah. And I remember enjoying it, but I don't remember what it was that like made it distinct.
Right, right. So yeah, man, I would highly recommend, like you said, an occasion beer. Like it's a special occasion thing because it was fun to pop the cork and shoot it 10 feet, and then it was just really good, man. It was, highly recommend, highly recommend. So excellent. These Belgian things, man, like I'm starting to like, this is the second Belgian style. If that's really what it is, it seems like I believe you that it's probably
I mean, it's definitely going to be that style. I don't know if Golden Drach is from Belgium
or not. Yeah.
But like the doubles and the triples and things like that are,
man,
generally speaking, I'm used to those being Belgian style.
I'm feeling this style. Like I'm digging it. I like it. So we are officially in the season of Lent.
Yeah, and I almost responded on instinct with like a hooray and then remembered, oh, wait, no. Lent is not actually, like, it's a good and beautiful season, so I wouldn't necessarily be wrong to, but it is a much more kind of subdued season. And so like,
yeah, there's not a starting lot of like caroling around.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of, caroling is a great vision for it, actually. I'm just like envisioning people singing their repent carols,
walking up and down in all black and like singing dirges
covered in ash from their forehead, you know.
Oh, I'm not going to say our culture doesn't need more of that, but it's one of those things that probably wouldn't stick. Yeah, I get that. But
it's hard to work up a crowd for coming together to go and sing those door to door. Remember, O man, you are dust, and to dust you shall return is not,
boy, that
not
really,
generally speaking, something that brings the crowds
that
out.
That really picked up my Tuesday.
just what I needed in the middle of the week to really get me going again. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. But I thought it would be interesting because like, I've really been chewing on the whole order and disorder kind of thing about Lent and, you know, reordering during Lent, you know, and so the idea of, you know, having a disordered life or disordered desires or anything like that has just kind of been tumbling around in my noggin. And I was wondering about the temptations of Christ in the desert, right? So they're kind of going, I'm wondering if these two thoughts are colliding and they're going to become something, or if it's just going to be like a derailed Japanese speed train of a thought that you know, explodes and is a total mangled mess. And so I was wondering if, like, are we able to use the temptations in the desert as, like, a model or something to extrapolate what a disordered life would be? I guess my thought is that if these are temptations, then these would be, like, something that would be pulling you. Like, if you're properly ordered and you're being tempted, you'd be tempted towards disorder, right? And so if these are temptations to Christ, then that would be an attempt to disorder him in some way. And so I'm wondering if, I'm just trying to put these thoughts together. I don't know if it'll work or not, but that's kind of my initial.
I think it does. And here's why. Kind of building on what you were just saying, it's important for us to keep in mind that God is the creator. Satan can't create.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the temptations and the sin, and this is one of the things we've talked about before as well. All of those are about taking something which God created and is therefore good and twisting it via that disordering, like by putting it up a rank or by ultimately trying to bring God down ranks in importance and not having God at the head of things is ultimately Satan's strategy in all things.
Right.
Because it's the only strategy available to him. And so, like, when we look at these three temptations that Christ endured in the desert when Satan is coming up trying to, like, derail things super early on. Like, it's for context purposes, you know, just remembering that this is Jesus has been baptized by John the Baptist, and then he goes off into the desert for 40 days, because this is a common theme in Christ's ministry, is that anytime he's about to go do something, he's first going to go spend some time just him and God. And so he goes out into the wilderness. It's just him. He's preparing himself, and Satan shows up to try and, you know, mess with things before it's too late. Unfortunately, you know, for Satan, fortunately for us, it was always too late.
Yeah.
That whole thing of God being in control of time, really, I don't know how Satan missed that little wrench in his plans, but and I do think as soon as you, like, kind of mentioned this idea to me, I got actually really excited, because, in one of the books that I have read parts of, like, literally dozens of times, but have never actually finished, there's a book that's just called Jesus of Nazareth by, so it's Pope Benedict the 16th, but he actually wrote it when he was still just Cardinal Ratzinger.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the chapters in it is, like, essentially him kind of talking about these temptations of Christ and why these temptations would be tempting and why these would be the ones that Satan would go for specifically with his attempts to like lure Jesus off track. And so, like, I am in the notes that I put together on here, like, a lot of them are kind of
pulling from
inspired
that.
By Cardinal Ratzinger, Pope Benedict the 16th on that.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Because the first one, like you said, is seemingly small or inconsequential, because, like you were saying, that it's to take something that is good or morally neutral and to use that to create disorder. Like, food, you know, is kind of like one of those things where it's like that food is not bad, you know, like that's the first one, right? Like, I'm not losing track, right? It's the temptation.
No, the first one is Jesus has been in the desert for the 40 days and he hasn't eaten, hasn't had anything to drink. And so Satan shows up and is like, well, then why not just turn some of these rocks into bread?
Yeah. And I guess I don't understand the full temptation there, because it's one of those things where, I mean, like, I guess I would be naturally distrustful. If Satan showed up and told me to do something, I'd be like, I don't like your look. I'm going to say no, but I don't know why.
There is something to that. But I think the other thing that makes this temptation somewhat harder for us to kind of put ourselves into Christ's shoes on this one, is that, like, I don't know, I've talked about the idea that I'm starving before, but I've never actually experienced
it. True.
Not in any real threatening way. You know, correct. We used to do the fast we did together, mm-hmm. from like Holy Thursday through the Easter Vigil. And yeah, no, there were some times where like I could feel my stomach kind of like eating itself
a little bit. That was hunger, yeah, but not.
Yeah, absolutely. I knew what that was, but I also knew that there was an end point to it.
Mm-hmm.
This was not an actual threat to my very self. Whereas, you know, Jesus has gone 40 days without eating. And yeah, Jesus knows that there's an end point to it as well. But like, I can see why Satan might have thought at that point, like, oh, well, let's start with this. But there's also, I think, one of the things that's really kind of interesting about the idea of starting with something like food is that food is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you think about even in kind of the modern day, when people talk about reasons why they don't believe in God and like a just and loving God, especially, they'll point to the idea of like children starving.
Mm-hmm.
And so like God having the power to turn rocks into bread and feed people, it seems on a certain level like, well, duh, yeah, do that.
Right. Right.
Starvation is a major problem and you can solve it literally with a snap of your fingers. Cool. Get to snapping. And so like there is something very kind of naturally, commonsensibly appealing in that idea to me of like, no, this is a problem. But remember, you've got the power to fix it. So why not do that?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess ultimately when you're looking at it is, so Jesus is being called to something higher, right? I guess the temptation is to maintain the animal mind, right? The, like, keep him focused on the baser levels and not elevate to Christ, but remain focused on the body and say, you know, like, yes, I have this mission, but I'm really hungry. Like, you don't look past your stomach because there's nothing beyond that, right? Like, you're just kind of, you're an animal. Make food, yeah. Eat food, and do what animals do.
Oh, absolutely. And there's also like a certain level of, you know, keeping in mind, like, what does Jesus always say his mission is? He came to do the will of his Father. Mm-hmm. Which means he's called to rely on his Father to provide. Like, there is this, I was going to say implicit, but that's not accurate. It's explicit. Like, Christ says it multiple times over and over. Like, no, my Father has got this. Mm-hmm. Anything I ask of him, he will do for me. And so here we've got Satan using this natural good as an attempt to, like, sever that supernatural good.
Mm.
Like, can you actually count on your Father to provide for you? What kind of a father leaves his son starving in the desert for 40 days? Mm. Why would you continue to rely on him? Just fix the problem yourself.
Yeah. This does have kind of like a correlation to the snake in the garden, right? Like, where it's, mm-hmm. kind of like, is it actually bad? Is that actually what God said? Like, you know, and then like, and it's around food, you know, yep. It's around eating. And like I said, like kind of those, that baser instinct, like why, I mean, obviously it's an apple because that's what, or not an apple, but a fruit, which God said. Yeah. But I mean, like, why is that the first sin, you know? And why is that the first temptation?
Well, and like, even when you look at the way Eve responds when the snake starts talking about the fruit, and Eve's response, and it says that Eve looked at the fruit and saw that it was good for eating.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it's not just that, like, this fruit is there, but like, it looked delicious. Mm-hmm. Like, this is clearly food. This clearly can be eaten, and there would clearly be some benefit to eating it. And so, because Eve doesn't fully understand the reason why God has said, no, don't eat that. And because Adam, who's right there with her, because like, mm-hmm. that's one of the funny things to me in the story is that like all of a sudden Eve just turns to Adam. Like Adam doesn't show up on the scene. He's just apparently standing there watching this interaction between.
Like he bent down to tie his shoe and missed that Eve pulled the
food. Yeah. Like, all right.
What did you do? Nom, nom, nom.
I'm gonna go ahead and act all surprised. Yeah, no, no. You were sitting there watching this dialogue happen, you lazy monster. But no, like, so because they don't know God's plan, it's a weakness in them where they are able to, Satan is able to exploit that lack of knowledge into being a lack of trust. Mm. You know, where it's like, they don't know why. And on a certain level, we could in our pride, like one of the things that I am prone to is like, God, you know, if you would just let me know what the plan is and let me know why you don't want me to do this and why you do want me to do this, then yeah, obviously I'll get on board. Why don't you just tell me? And like the reality is part of it is because if God did tell me, I still wouldn't totally understand because his ways are not my ways.
Yeah.
But another very real part of it is like, dude, trust me.
Yeah.
But like, go ahead, point out the one thing that I've asked you to do that didn't benefit you.
Yeah.
Point out the one thing that I asked you not to do that harmed you. By like listening to me. Name one time. Would you just freaking trust me?
Yeah.
But Adam and Eve? Oh no, that does look delicious. You know, Snake? You make a good point. Yeah. I'm gonna go take a big bite.
Nom 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 nom.
Yeah.
And it's interesting too because, you know, we operate on faith, right? But Christ didn't have a faith, right? He had a full knowledge, essentially. Like to make it different, right? So he did know the plan. So like when he's being like, that's, and thus the recapitulation, right? Like this is a dude who does fully know, is able to take the same temptation and reestablish the proper order of things because he knows he can do and does it. Right. And so now it's, we have the new Adam kind of a thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think it's interesting too, because like he is God. And so he does have full knowledge, but he was also fully human. And so like there is kind of this interesting thing, like he knew all things necessary for doing the will of God. You know, in the Gospel of Luke, we get things about Jesus growing in wisdom and knowledge as he ages. So it's clearly not just like he's got the full divine encyclopedia in his head and can just flip through pages.
Full knowledge wasn't the right word. Yeah.
No,
I got what you're saying.
Because I think you're right. It is still full knowledge, but it is that idea too, though, of just remembering that like, it's not so much like full knowledge of, you know, when his next meal is going to be or anything like that. It's full knowledge of who God the Father is.
Oh, like, that's good. Yep.
He knows his father so fully and so perfectly that Satan trying to play this same trick that worked once before on humanity. I say once before. I guess I can say it was once before if we just consider all sin to be from this one. But like this trick of divide and conquer worked because we have not been able to like fully wrap our heads around just how good God the Father is. Jesus, on the other hand, is like, man, you cannot even come in here and try and hold a candle next to any of this.
Yeah. Like,
anything you're going to offer me is so blatantly, automatically, clearly, and distinctly less. This is like trying to go up to an adult and trying to trade them $3 for $1 bill because three is more than one, you know, like with your girls when they're really little, you could probably pull that off.
I think I tried it as a good dad joke. I mean, like you have to.
Oh yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, it was a Shel Silverstein poem. Like you have to do it. But like as an adult, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. And so Satan is very much here to me, at least it reads as, Satan is trying a trick that works on children not able to like fully prepare for, or maybe he just didn't have any other cards to play for the fact that he is now dealing with like what is actually an adult relationship with God.
Yeah.
Like that fully grown, fully matured. Yeah. I don't mean adult in terms of like where an adult human being would be.
Yeah.
But like faith that has reached full maturity, relationship with God. Because you're right, it's not really faith when you know. But like that relationship with God that has reached full maturity.
I really like that distinction between like full knowledge. When we say full knowledge, we would expect he's like, oh, at 7:04 a.m. tomorrow morning, I'm going to have two eggs and one slice of bacon. Like, but it's more about the nature of things, like the nature of God and the trust that can come from really knowing who God is. Because again, we've said it 8 billion times, like it's relational, right? And Christ mm-hmm. demonstrates the relationship aspect. And then it also kind of brings us into a point that, or kind of a piece that I wanted to bring up as well, because I've been chewing on this for a minute. And I think it goes, when I was reading your notes, it kind of made me think of it is, I don't remember again my context why I think a lot of random things, and I'm sorry. I wish I had like context to give to it, but I'll go back, and there was a video that I watched where, you know, I'm sure they did it intentionally, where they put like a fundamental Christian next to a raunchy comedian, right? Mm-hmm. And then of course they ask them about sex, right? And so the fundamental Christian has no problem saying yes, that is something that's sacred. You know, God is a part of all human relationships. And then of course the comedian pursues to make, you know, voyeuristic, inappropriate jokes about that situation. Right. And so that kind of being the context and thinking about how our human interactions, you know, are kind of models or shadows for the relationship with God, that these things that we're supposed to have. And I was thinking how that dynamic played out. And it's because like the atheist can't see past their own body, right? There is nothing beyond them. And so using the bread, like they can't see past the hunger to see the vision or the God, right? They can't see past their own senses into that spiritual dimension type of a thing. And so that was another thing where I was thinking about how the temptation being around bread and hunger and these things right here, we're saying again, and why I've been going back to using that animal base instincts thing, is that it's kind of saying, you know, don't look past your own self, because you are your own little God. You're your own animal. There's nothing beyond what you feel. There's just this feeling, right? There's just the mm-hmm. hunger that you feel. There's nothing more than that. And I was thinking all of these things kind of rolling around together, and about how there is the very real thing in front of us, but we as Christians, or we who know God, know that there's the thing that's in front of us, and then there's the next thing,
mm-hmm.
right? The thing beyond what is in front of us, beyond our own bodies.
Definitely. And I think too, it really, it connects as well to the idea we've talked about a couple of times before, that idea of the hierarchy of needs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where a lot of it comes back to, for me, that idea of trust, because I am able to see past and move past my immediate needs and my immediate circumstances, because I believe that those will be accounted for. You know, that I will be able to, why are your daughters able to go out and like engage their imagination and pretend about Avatar and those kinds mm-hmm. of things? Because they have confidence that the real world is handled for them mm-hmm. by mom and dad.
Right. Right.
Like they've got that confidence there. And so I think that's where for a materialist perspective mm-hmm. where like all that exists is the existence and this is the end of it. I think that inability to see an underlying thing, to see the foundational thing, to see the roots upon which the tree of life grows, I think it would make it incredibly difficult then to move beyond the self, because the self is like in danger at all times.
Right.
There is nothing that is guaranteeing the self other than the self.
Mm-hmm.
And so right. without that kind of security that comes from it, yeah, you know, I mean, and I would say it makes it tough. Like, certainly there are people who are very generous in spite of being materialists in their philosophy sure. or things like that. But I would say that it's a lot more difficult to sustain, and that it is viewed at that point much more as an outpouring of abundance rather than a requirement of nature, you know, mm-hmm. that I do these things.
Right.
You know, because the Christian mindset on the need to look past ourselves isn't just to look past ourselves to God, but to look past ourselves to neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that is an obligation. It is a responsibility we have, because it's who we are. In the same way that God is generous with us and we're created in his image and likeness, I am to place my trust that God has got me. And so I can go out and have others. Mm-hmm. I can get them taken mm-hmm. care of, and place my trust in God to provide what I need, so long as the way I'm taking care of others is the way God is calling me to.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong. I am not out here advertising the idea of, yeah, we should all sell everything we've got, give all the money to the poor, and then just like live day to day.
And everybody be poor. Yeah.
Right. Not what I'm calling for here.
Yeah.
Now there are some people who are called to do that.
Sure.
You know, sure. And I think that's incredible and that's beautiful, but like I'm definitely of the opinion you should wait for God to call you on that before you just go and do it.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
But to me, as like we kind of wrap this stuff up and start bringing it into life lessons, for me, that's really kind of where this all comes back to for me, is that mm-hmm. need to trust in God. You know, I can say that I have faith. I can say I believe. But I need to put myself in positions where that's tested. I need to pull myself out of my comfort zone, go beyond me, and rely on God to have me in the midst of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the times that I have done that, I have experienced peace, joy, and comfort in a way that I don't any other time.
Yeah.
And in the times where I experience regret, it's because I haven't done that. And I have known afterwards. I mean, really, I knew at the time, but then I continue to know afterwards. I had an opportunity to like actually lean on God here, but I didn't trust God as much as I trusted me.
Mm-hmm.
And that is always a thing that comes back to bite me squarely in the backside.
Yeah. Is it James where he's talking about the faith and works? Like, show me works out of faith.
Yes.
That's what I was thinking about when you're there, when you're talking there, is that, you know, we've always argued that it's a faith and works thing, but I think maybe one of his points is that you have to put your faith to work to see it, right? Like you have to do something in order to trust God. You can't sit in a dark closet and say that you're trusting God, right? Like you have to go do something for your faith to be exercised in every version of that word, right? On the layers of the meaning of that word.
Mm-hmm.
So faith and works is not just like, hey, I did a good thing, but it's about working out your faith, and you get that trust from that. And
absolutely.
You know, like I think my life lesson as I'm thinking about it is that, you know, it's the season of fasting and reordering. And I think the biggest thing for me there is to take a second and see past the immediate, right? Like Christ was feeling that immediate hunger. There's the immediate need. There's the self, right? There's us and what we feel. And these are things that we know. And it does take faith to look past that feeling and to trust, like you're saying, to trust God, right? And so you do have to kind of do something, but look past that feeling of uncomfortable. Like, I guess mine is kind of the other side of the coin of what you're saying, right? Like, you're kind of talking about the external, and I'm talking about that internal feeling that, like, of yourself, right? Like, maybe it's the inhibition or the self insecurity, right? Like, you're feeling insecure because you can't look past the fear of judgment on yourself, right? Like, it's the thing that happens inside your head that keeps you from acting, right? And so you can't look past, you can't get past your own self. But the point of our Christian life is to get past the self and see beyond that. And when you can get into that, then you're walking in faith, and that's a whole different ball game.
And that's where, like, the encounter with God is possible. Like, God is in all places, including in my own mind. But, like, to really encounter him as he is, it's going to be too big. He's too big to live inside my head. I got to get out of there if I'm going to find him.
Yep. Love it.
I like that a lot.
Cool. All right. And I think we're going to hit the other three in separate podcasts, because I think there's a lot. Like, we read it all as like a single story, but I am kind of excited about doing a deep dive in this scenario. I don't think I've really done a deep dive on the temptations. So
nice.
I'm excited for this.
Looking forward to it.
You got anything else on your brain there, man?
Nah, I'm good.
Right on. With that, we will say
adieu.